Bravo. Good. Good morning. Welcome to another show. Change it up a bit. This is going to be Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective for the next couple hours. We're here every other Sunday on WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. Thank you very much for your help. Going away, DJs. And we are here, like I said, every other Sunday. And today we're going to be talking about May 1st, possible, believe it or not, general strikes here in the United States. Yes, sirree. And other actions and protests against Trump and for women's rights, for workers' rights, to stop the attacks on immigrants and Muslims, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just getting Diego on
here. Hello.
Yes, hey. Your co-host today, myself, Jeff, and...
How do you say that in France? Vive la grève?
Yeah, long live the strike.
Vive la grève.
Vive la grève. On est en grève. On est à grève. Stuff like that. Yep. Let me do more paperwork here.
Here's a good movie for you, Jeff.
What?
Paris 36.
Oh, yeah.
Get Definitely. That at the library. It's a good Definitely. French movie. It's about 1936.
Did you watch it yourself?
Oh, I love it. It's a comedy, but it takes place. There's a lot of like politics behind it.
Yeah, there was a nominally left government in power.
Yeah, yeah, it was in that time. Yep. It was a big. That's why I learned how to say "Vive la grève, vive la grève."
Yep. In fact, they asked me on this form here. Anything else you'd like to share? I'll say "Vive la radio," since I do a lot of.
Let me check outside real quick, Jeff.
Sure. Yep. Just because I do a lot of this stuff. All right. Paperwork all done. Thank you for tuning in. Our legal name is WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford. We also call ourselves Tufts Educational Radio, also Tufts Freeform Commercial Free Community Based Radio. And as we said, if you just tuned in or didn't, welcome our regular listeners to Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. To our non-regular listeners, those newbies that are just tuning in and saying, what's going on? Who's interrupting my brunch with this radical talk? This is a show that's actually been on the air many, many years here at WMFO.
This is our centurion.
We're over our 10th year. And we are basically, like our title, like our tagline says, we're mostly a talk show. We throw in some music. We are about socialism. And what's interesting about this show, I think, is that there are some, you know, left-wing radio shows on the air, mostly clustered in the left, not coincidentally, in the left part of your radio dial if they have an over-air signal. I'm not talking about podcasts right now. I'm talking about stuff that still goes out over the airwaves. And like this station, WMFO. We also are, by the way, go to WMFO.org to listen by computer, listen to the live stream. So anyway, so here we are going out live. And most of the stations that carry any kind of progressive programming, I'll even go that far and say just say progressive, not to mention left wing, are college radio stations. This station emanates from Tufts University. Now, with the wonders of the internet, we actually... go international. And one time we did this like appeal from our Facebook page, which you can find at Socialist Alternative on Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook, I'm sorry, or go to Socialist Alternative on Facebook. And on our Facebook page, all of a sudden we were getting likes from all over the world because somebody had somehow, I don't know how it happened, they just sent this
Fanny
around.
Fanny Rice, impossible.
Yeah, impossible. Could be.
You know, the other day I was looking for that, to look at our archives,
It's
and
down.
It's not there, I don't see it no more.
Yeah.
It comes up as the Irish Uprising, which was basically okay. The original Fanny.
Okay, so Fanny and Rising, that what Diego was talking about, was a website that
or
just
blog.
On their own, down a blog, you're right,
it was
a blog, yeah, downloaded our shows and archived them, because the station here only archives shows for the last month. And for us, that means really only two shows a month maximum. Usually one is archived. And Feeding and Rising, just on their own, and we thank them for it, archived and downloaded a ton of our shows for years. They did that. I think they've cut back on that a bit. Now they're doing it on Facebook, perhaps. So you can check out Feeding and Rising, F-E-N-I-A-N, Rising on Facebook.
Okay.
It's a socialist from Philadelphia, I believe, is doing that. And thanks again. And anyone else that wants to download our shows for free and keep them and archive them and all that, is that'd be great. We should be doing it ourselves, but there's some pressing organizing to be done. Speaking of which, we're going to talk about today, organizing for May 1st. which is, and there's other things happening before May 1st. Actually, before I forget, let's just get into that for a second. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. Let's go back for a second. If you're a first-time listener, what this show is about, this is what I was getting to, is that we are unabashedly pro-socialist, pro-democratic socialist, pro-Marxist. We are pro-union 110%. We're stuff that...
Pro-Trotskyist.
We're not trying to hide our politics at all on this show. We're not trying to...
We're anti-Stalinist.
Anti-Stalinist, yeah. We could make a good list. We're not trying to... we're not trying to give the appearance of being fair and balanced. No one is that. No media outlet is that. When the corporate media, including National Public Radio, by the way, claims they are being objective, it's a lie. They are completely subjective. Their default position is pro-capitalist.
And they're biased.
They're incredibly biased.
Everyone's biased.
Yeah, everyone is biased.
If you say I'm not biased, I'm like, yes, you're biased. Everybody's biased. I'm biased. Everybody's got their own, you know what I mean? Everybody's,
right, but that doesn't mean there's no truth, or that doesn't mean there's no momentary truth or nothing that makes sense. There's a lot of truth out there. There's a lot of things that make sense, at least for a time. Everything is changing all the time, but you know, there's a reality. There's an objective reality. We're not denying that. We're just saying that the interpretation of that objective reality is inherently biased, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because some biases could be using a good method of analysis, and we can think Marxism is a good method of analysis and a good guide to political action. It's not a dogma as you're taught in school. It's not a closed system as you might think. It's an open system. Marxism is basically just a tool of analysis and a guide to political action. And it can be used scientifically for other things as well, but it's mostly for politics. And so for us, we're trying to figure out what's going on, how best to get involved, but also to organize explicitly for socialism. Organize so that you can, if you want to, get involved with the socialist movement. You can join Socialist Alternative. You can become part of the International Socialist Movement. Socialist Alternative is in political solidarity with the Committee for Workers International, which has groups and parties in about 50 countries around the world. And there's a whole world out there, of course, hidden, just like working class history is hidden, just like the history of socialism is hidden from most people. And that's no accident under capitalism. The biggest threat to capitalism is socialism, is democratic socialism. And the capitalists will do anything to consciously or unconsciously, just as part of their system,
even authors,
to keep you off socialism, keep you away from it.
I'm reading a book called Cuba from Stephen Kuntz. And this is, look, I'm just the beginning. I'm like, oh, I like the guy's way he writes. But then he starts getting into the Russian guy that's helping, I guess, a missile base or a missile silo. He's like, something about, oh, the slave to the state. I'm like, huh, who's talking about slave to the state? What about under capitalism, you know?
Yep. And but by the way, if you hear us bring up Cuba, it's not from a position of liking the Cuban government or Castro or whatever. Our position on Cuba is basically we want to see a political revolution there that would result in democratic socialism and not control,
which we never had.
We're seeing you getting a call. Let me try to answer. WMFO, you're on the air. WMFO, you're on the air. Hello. That didn't work.
The volume.
WMFO, hello? You're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. What's up?
Yeah, I'd like to ask, what do you think about President Trump trying to take the Meals on Wheels away from the elderly?
What do you think? We hate it.
Not necessary.
We hate it.
Unnecessary.
There's
plenty of food in this country's abundance, and for him to do that just shows the nature of his class.
Yeah, we're 110% against Trump and very active in what we call the anti-Trump movement. I don't know if you heard, but yesterday there were protests against Trump in Boston. Well, they started as pro-Trump things, right, in Boston and Providence and some other cities around the country. But the anti-Trump protesters far outnumbered the pro-Trumpy people. Anyway, what do you think about that? Oh, I think he hung up. All right, cool. Anyway, thanks for calling in.
Oh, it's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. We hate we hate Trump taking away meals on meals for Meals on Wheels. We hate even the thought of that doing that. But
That's like Thatcher taking the food away from the children.
Margaret Thatcher.
Milk Thatcher. Thatcher, the milk Thatcher.
One of the first things Margaret Thatcher did when she came in as a conservative prime minister of Britain back in the 70s was to cut programs to school children that provided free milk. But, you know, one thing that sets us apart from people that are complaining about Trump, and rightly so, they are, they should complain about Trump, they should protest Trump, is that we're saying, look, whatever you point to, whether it's Meals on Wheels or the Obamacare, which was ACA, what does ACA stand for? Something, I always get it wrong, something Care Act, American...
Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Affordable Care Act, whether it's that or whatever, we don't stop at saying, wow, Trump is trying to cut back and that's bad. We're saying make those things better. Meals on Wheels could be vastly improved, you know, and it should be. It should have a lot more money going to it. It should be expanded drastically. The Affordable Care Act has tons of problems. It was never any good because it was basically a handout to the big insurance corporations. And the Obama administration made that part of the machinery. You know, we're going to do this through corporations, basically. The insurance comes from corporations. And they mess with that in a million different ways, despite the restrictions put on. And not everyone was covered, you know, and the premiums kept going up.
And if you're not on it.
You got penalized, right?
I got penalized. And I like the way it's like, let's look at the markets, what's available. Markets. Has nothing to do. This is a service. It's not a market. This is not a business. You guys, now you're talking. I never heard that term before.
Markets got nothing to do with, I mean, think about market with healthcare. You're making money off sick people. Are you proud of yourself? Look at this guy Baker, this joke of a idiot who likes to be called Charlie. I think we should call him Sir Charles because he's straight up capitalist class, man. He's straight up 1% and he goes around talking like he's a man of the people. He's nothing, man. He is our enemy. This guy Baker comes from the health insurance racket, Harvard Pilgrim, whatever it was, making millions off of sick people, and he's coming in here and he's privatizing the crap out of the MBTA among other evil things he's done. You see the latest thing, by the way? Actually, we're going to get to that later in the show, but they keep chopping off Baker and the Democrats in control in the state, Massachusetts. They keep chopping off parts of the MBTA and privatizing them, laying the workers off and privatizing them, and more corporate welfare to the big corporations. So, you know, Baker, for example, and the Democrats in Massachusetts, they like Romney Care, which was what ACA was based on. People don't know that. A lot of people, it's not their fault, but I'm just saying. The Affordable Care Act was based on Romney Care here in Massachusetts. And both, right from the start, were done from the perspective of how to make big business richer, how to make the corporations, the big insurance companies richer, not how to provide the best health care for people, not that everyone deserves health care, not that everyone has a right to health care. Republicans and Democrats sometimes, they want to use that word entitlement as a shaming mechanism. I say we're entitled to the world. Working people are entitled to the world. That's what Marxism is about. That was what socialism is about. Workers of the world, you have nothing to lose but your chains. You know, I saw this thing on Facebook.
Well, we make the world go round. There was nothing
workers
gets done
do the
without
work.
Us.
Workers do the work. Say no more. You know that
you
workers,
don't have a company.
Labor
if
creates
that,
all wealth.
If that product is not being made
or
produced.
If some rich idiot could build a car or 5 million cars all on their own, they would do it, but they can't. And all this talk about automation, some of it's true. Automation is coming in and the capitalists are using it as a tool to make themselves richer and to lay people off and stuff. But there's still an incredible amount of intense physical labor and mental labor being done throughout the economy that automation does not erase. In fact, automation creates sometimes more maintenance requirements, more planning requirements. All machines depreciate. All machines fail. They require maintenance. They require upkeep. I saw a burger flipper machine today being on Facebook. And I'm like, that's going to kill some people because the thing's going to start to fail. And there's going to be about 10 or maybe 100 burgers that go out with botulism in them, basically, because the machine didn't flip them. Let them cook long enough.
Yeah.
And, oh, we didn't fix that. Sorry. It's like with the Uber thing, you know, and I'm not being anti-technology here. Technology can, under socialism, could free people from a lot of things. But under capitalism, it brings up problems. Unemployment and not done for effectiveness, but done for profit. So they're going to cut corners even on the automation. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of things aren't automated. See, automation could be even bigger than it is now. Automation could be throughout the economy in a way that would amaze people. But the capitalists don't want to spend the money to make it happen.
For the population.
More free time.
Yeah.
But that's only if you don't rely on your job for everything, for your livelihood. That's only in a society where wealth is distributed equally. Not in a society where you're so much depends on your job, everything from your basic money, your basic livelihood to survive. But also things like health care and other things through you get through your job and you have to pay for, even if you get them through your job. And that's really really, really wrong. But the thing about this burger flipper thing, I was going to give another example. The automated driving cars, the automatic driving cars, the driverless cars. You've been reading about that.
And the
there's
trucks.
There's been another accident. You remember the one that happened in Florida? There's been one. There's a new one in Arizona now, just like within the last couple of days, I believe, where an automated car was crashed because another car driven by a human. Just didn't do something that the automated car thought would happen. It took a left turn, which happens all the time to me, in front of the car or something, instead of stopping and letting the car go. So it couldn't adjust fast enough and boom, right? Accident. So they're stopped to testing. Now, I'm not saying that from like a perspective of there's no way to figure that out. I'm just saying it from a perspective of, are we voting on that technology? Are we saying we need driverless cars right now? Are we going to be forced to take driverless cars later on when we don't want to? I never want to. I never want to once be in one of those things. I like driving, you know.
Now thinking about the trucks.
Yep.
Oh, let's cut the. We don't need drivers to drive our goods around the country.
But some of the biggest.
Which I can see that being a disaster.
But some of the biggest. People into technology will admit, if you question them, machines fail, machines wear down. The minute you turn a machine on, it starts to depreciate in value under capitalism, and it starts to wear down, and you got to fix
them. And they may turn on you if they feel you're being oppressed.
I'm not even getting into the
Terminator.
The Terminator thing is a different story, but and I kind of agree with that, by the way, but that's a whole other
universe.
We're being oppressed.
I want a union. They start going.
Well, no. What it was they started thinking, and they did the the computers thought that humans were the cause of problems. So why not trigger a nuclear war to get rid of humans? Very logical, right? But anyway, back to the before they're at
and the
that.
Computer knew if we hit Russia, they'll react. Be it.
Yeah. But before we get to that point, or in the Matrix movies, same thing. Before we get to that point, even at the level of burger flipping automation. There's so much technology, so much automation that could be happening that's not done because it costs so much money to put in and to maintain, and the capitalists finally make a lot more money by not spending that through, guess what, exploiting cheap labor. You know, so there's times all the time under capitalism since it began where the answer is not always new machine. The answer is often exploit cheaper labor, get cheaper raw materials, sell it for a higher price.
That's like
there's
China.
All these variables that go in China. If you look at the factory floors
they
in China,
they have automation. But you look at the factory floors, it's like
it's like
God,
the 30s
this is like
in America
to the Lowell.
Yeah,
when the
exactly
food factories.
Exactly very dense labor, very densely populated factory floors filled with people labor. Doesn't mean there's no automation. It just means they're adding this cheap human component to it that is making people like Apple, or not people, but corporations like Apple, incredibly rich. The people that run Apple, incredibly rich. And then they over here in this country say, oh yeah, it's not really us moving your job to China. It's not really us doing this or that. It's automation. No, you're wrong. It's in other countries, you're not doing the automation the way you're doing it here. And even here, they don't always do that. You know, once they break up, like in the steel industry, once they break up a lot of the big unions and stuff, they find they can exploit, you know, even in manufacturing. There's a lot of people don't understand. In the United States, a lot of manufacturing done on the cheap now. Workers going into car plants making only about $11 an hour, right? And you think
they went strictly down south?
Exactly.
Kentucky, yeah. Mississippi, yeah. Alabama.
That's a great example, right? Here's the thing.
Texas.
Pretend you're in the corporate boardroom, right? You're absolutely right, Diego. You're absolutely right. Pretend you're in the corporate boardroom and you say to yourself, as the evil scum that run this country, the corporate CEOs, say, okay, what should we do? Should we automate the factory in Michigan? You know, for
$1 billion. You know.
No, we'll automate it. That'll get rid of the unions too. Let's say we're going to get rid of the unions no matter what. We're going to get rid of the unions through automation and or through this or that, through cheap labor going down south, like you say. Or do we go down south, risk a possible union drive, because Nissan workers are organizing, by the way, down south. We're going to get into that in a second. Or hopefully later. But anyway, so you have the choice. You go down south and go after cheap labor. Well, they're going after cheap labor. Boeing, same thing. Boeing in Washington State. Are they automating? And they have such a monopoly, by the way. There's only like two big plane companies in the world now.
Airbus.
Boeing and Airbus, right? So Boeing in Washington State said, let's just go down to where the heck was it? I forget what state. South Carolina, was it? They just had that vote that lost, unfortunately. Let's go down to South Carolina and exploit the crap out of the cheap labor. Exploit the crap out of the people there because they're paying taxes and we're going to get tax breaks, or automate in Seattle. Well, they chose to go down to South Carolina. It's cheaper. You got to understand, capitalism is not an efficient system like they say. Anyone that is listening to this show that has heard about the efficiencies of capitalism, think again. Capitalism is extremely, extremely wasteful. There is no check on productive processes except for regulation, which is variable and has to be enforced and so on, or the sort of market itself, which does reach a kind of a socially necessary labor time, as Marx called it, for production, meaning the combination of machine and human at a given time in history, at a given place. And this is like the cheapest, fastest way to produce stuff. That's why there is actually machinery and automation. Yes, it gets introduced, but does it get introduced uniformly all at once everywhere? No. Does it get introduced in the most efficient way? No. So you think of the horrible waste of capitalism, everything from food waste to the byproducts of capitalist production, the pollution and so on, the enormous waste and pollution, plus the non-planning aspect of it. So to get to that socially necessary labor time is a lot of hit and miss, a lot of inefficiency. A lot of deciding to, maybe here it makes sense. The social necessary labor time to churn out a car in the United States is low due to more automation than in other places. But our profit rate is higher by going to China, making it over there in Vietnam or India, making the thing there, shipping it all the way back because the cheap labor is so cheap. The shipping now is so cheap that we're going to make more money that way. Can you imagine how stupid and polluting that is? And yet that's what they do.
Well, I found out the other day because I called T-Mobile and I had a representative. And I found out I said, well, I'll call you back tomorrow.
India.
Said, no.
No?
He
Sorry.
Said, so what time? I'm in Pacific time. Oh, you're in LA? I asked him. Oh, so it said, I think it was 9 o'clock here. Over there would be 6 something. He's like, no, it's 9 o'clock here. How can it be 9 o'clock over there and it's 9 o'clock? No, I'm 9 a.m. in the Philippines.
Oh, there you go. Yep, there you go.
I said, what? Where are you at?
Thanks,
the
T-Mobile.
Philippines?
Yep.
You go. So you represent whoever's talking to you on the phone may be in India or somewhere else.
Of course. Yeah, a lot of people know that now. But what they don't understand is they don't step back and think, is that really a good use of resources? Did they do that because they want to develop India? We had some idiot manager where I work claim to some worker that you can't complain about outsourcing because we're helping people in India. First of all, who's we? Right, you're not even we. You're some little supervisor. You're not in the 1%. So think about what you're saying. Think about who you're shilling for when you say something like that. And on top of that, it's like, no, you're exploiting the people in India. You're not helping them. You're exploiting the crap out of them. Who knows what the conditions are? Maybe they can get fired tomorrow. Maybe there's no union. You know. Also, what kind of job is it? You know.
It's pretty.
And
bad
also,
in
who
India.
Decided to go over there and exploit the cheap labor? It was the bosses. It wasn't the workers. So you know, don't say that we decided anything in that picture. You know. Just hold on 1 second here. Doing some paperwork again.
That's like my friend from India. He's from this section of India. I didn't even knew that was semi-socialist.
Yeah, Kerala. That's what they claim. Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
Right.
And he was telling me, things are bad in India. It's not all peachy.
Nope. No, and it's never been peachy in India. Are you kidding? I mean, it's.
Well, since England?
There's the whole idea that India has been going through rapid development lately. And there's it's just, you know, everyone's getting rich, just like in China. And it's both examples are lies. It's just a superficial analysis of what's going on that the corporate media puts forward. There's still incredible, incredible poverty in both countries, incredible inequality, and many steps backwards. I mean, you know, okay, so in China, maybe you're not breaking your back on a farm right now, but you're working in a big, where we're actually probably had pretty good benefits, but instead you're working now in a city for a corporation with no guarantee
and
of
you
anything.
Can't leave that factory.
And, well, you can leave at just like here at your risk of starving. That's the choice.
Oh, no, they actually, no, I've seen a documentary where, they have you there for a week. You only get weekend pass. And if the boss doesn't like, oh, well, you were late 5 minutes, you don't get the weekend pass to go home to your village or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's that bad.
By the way, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And if you want more information about how to get involved and help organize for socialism, help be active in a socialist movement that is growing in this country, by the way, we've on the show talked about how polling data shows it from Pew Research and other research organizations show a much more favorable attitudes towards the word socialism and towards socialism than ever before, perhaps, or since they started doing polling, and increasing positive attitudes towards socialism. Now we have other indicators that that's the case. Some people would call Bernie Sanders' campaign socialist. Now, I would argue with that, but I would say that some people thought it was socialist, and that's important. And by some, I mean a lot, numerically speaking. So when Sanders went over to, as was we predicted, and as he did, and turned everything over to the Clinton campaign, vote for Clinton, blah, blah, and that's part of the reason he's not a socialist. But anyway, some of those people started looking around for places to go politically. And they didn't all end up in the right place. Some of them probably voted for Trump, unfortunately, on some sort of false, sort of weird populist thing. Right-wing populism, left-wing populism. Some people can't differentiate sometimes, but there's clear differences. But anyway, in some ways, they are similar. If you call Sanders what he did left-wing populism, he never attacked capitalism as a system. He never attacked imperialism as a way capitalism maintains its power internationally and nationally. But on the other hand, so there were at least some people that went to the left after that, right? Some of them ended up in Socialist Alternative. Some of them ended up in other groups like Democratic Socialists of America and other groups out there that are growing. I would say on the left, I would say probably most left groups are growing right now, some faster than others. Social Alternative is growing fast.
Socialist Party.
DSA is growing fast. That one I wouldn't say is necessarily growing fast, but I would bet there's more interest at least. And so that's just indicators that people are sort of waking up a little more, and waking up doesn't mean sort of what a lot of people thought it would mean after Trump got elected. The Democrats look really good compared to Trump, so I'm just going to sort of slide on over to the Democrats, or slide back over to the Democrats after I supported something to the left of the Democrats, or I thought I was supporting something to the left of the Democrats. Not necessarily Sanders, but some of the things Sanders was talking about, you know? And then since the election, we've had, you know, the election, the Democratic National Committee electing all status quo Democrats, everyone that Sanders put forward, like Keith Ellison, got voted down. So the leadership of the Democratic Party is still firmly the more conservative wing, if you want to put it that way, of the Democratic Party. Not that we had any illusions in the liberal wing, but still, it's a, you know, if you want to make that differentiation. And then on top of that, Nancy Pelosi came out with this wonderful soundbite a few weeks ago. I think we talked about it on the show maybe about a month ago. Some young student was like, well, now that the election has happened, isn't it clear? And I think he was referencing some of the things Sanders talked about. Isn't it clear that the Democratic Party should move to the left on a lot of economic issues, that's actually popular with people? And Pelosi's answer was right away, well, we are capitalists after all, and that's just the way it is.
Oh,
Nancy Pelosi.
Not surprised.
70-something year old, entrenched leader of the Democratic Party out in California, very powerful state for the Democrats, etc. And then since then, we have some stuff coming up we're going to talk about. There's so many lessons every minute of the day practically in the United States, and this is a big country, of Democrats and the Democratic Party doing the thing that the corporations want, promoting capitalism, etc., despite their opposition, some of them, to Trump, you know. And by the way, so you might be wondering, as we're saying that, are these guys happy that Trump lost this, the whole healthcare thing? Of course we are. We're happy. Yeah, that's good. Trump got a defeat. But again, like we said earlier in the show,
well, we're still in the hole.
Our default, yeah, we're still in the hole. Our default position is not a little bit worse than horrible. You know, our default position is better. Let's do Medicare and Medicaid. Let's expand it, increase it, make it better for all. Make everyone, put everyone on Medicare and Medicaid. That's one way of saying, you know, socialized medicine. We want free healthcare, free universal healthcare for everyone in this country as a right. And if someone, again, back to our thing about entitlements.
Or nationalize the health, like England.
Sure, yeah. That's National Health Service, exactly. Same thing, sort of, basically. So I saw this thing on Facebook. Someone I didn't even know, Joe Walsh, I don't know if that's a conservative talk show guy or something. He says, well, if people think they're entitled to health care, then what's next? They're entitled to a job. They're entitled to a income. They're entitled to a house. And I'm like, yes, check. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, we're entitled to the world.
And what's the next?
We create the wealth.
You're entitled to live. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
exactly. We create the wealth. Labor creates all wealth. The capitalists steal from our labor. That's how they live. That's how they get rich. That's how inequality widens. And yes, we deserve, we are entitled to, we have to change that word entitlement from a pejorative word in the you know, because of the way the corporate media uses it, to a yes, we fight for our rights. Every human being is entitled to a decent life. Every human being is entitled to equal, truly equal opportunity and equal benefits in life, not what happens under capitalism, that if you are born into a wealthy family, you will have so many more rights and so much more entitlement to everything than the vast majority of the population, like 99%. Anyway, if you want more information about Socialist Alternative and how to get involved in the fight, welcome to the struggle. What is that thing? Welcome to the resistance. Check out info@socialistalternative.org by email. Check out facebook.com/socialistalternativeUSA. Twitter @socialistalt. Here in New England, in Boston, call 910-639-3948. 910-639-3948. Worcester, call 617-285-9346. Rhode Island, write to socialistalternativeRI@gmail.com. Etc. Lots of ways to get in touch, and please do also go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And again, we're giving you that information because anything you hear today, we just don't want you to be a wiser person or have more information. We want you to, and that's not, I'm not saying we have all the answers. I'm just saying some of the things we're saying here, you're not going to get on the corporate media. You're going to have access to your mind, maybe, if you get involved in Marxism and socialism is going to, hopefully, you're going to see the way things work a little more clearly. But that doesn't mean that's good enough. What you need to do is get involved. You need to organize. You need to show up. Get woke up. Stay woke. come to the, like, you know, yesterday there were anti-Trump rallies, like we started talking about, in many cities. That would have been a good thing to go to. April 4th. In many cities, there's going to be protests and even one-day strike action for $15 minimum wage. I'm not sure what's happening in this area yet, but look around for April 4th. Fight for 15. That slogan, you can plug into a Google search or a Facebook search, Fight for 15. And I heard there's going to be, on April 4th, a lot of protests for a $15 minimum wage. Help out the Ginger Jensen campaign, a member of Socialist Alternative running for office in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, in the biggest city there, for city council, based on a lot of different things, a lot of different issues, a lot of different improvements. But one of the main ones is the fight for 15, the fight for $15 minimum wage, which Socialist Alternative spearheaded and led with many other groups involved in Minneapolis. And we told this story on the air. We're going to keep telling it. It was polling at 65%, 66%, really good poll numbers. It was on the ballot, actually, for last November. And guess what happened? Democratic-run, actually, city council in Minneapolis, they all went against it, and they were losing that battle. They had said they were against it, and people were still for it, except for one or two Democrats broke with the other ones. And
for it or against?
Against it. They were against, the Democrats were against, and this is common actually around the country, against the $15 minimum wage proposal that was already on the ballot. But they were against it before that too, and people were just weren't listening to them. They were losing this battle for against 15, which was good because we're for 15 actually, and people were for 15, $15 minimum wage. And then the Democrats, since they lost the political battle, they went legal. They did the nuclear option, so to speak, out there. They got some Republican judges. Because there's not much, you know, there's differences between the Democrats and Republicans, but there's also a lot of similarities. So when it comes to the profits of big business, they often get together seamlessly, the Democrats and Republicans. And they did in Minneapolis. They got together and they got the judges to remove it from the ballot. And it's off the ballot, but the campaign continues. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But let me just riff on that Democratic Party thing for a second. That if I can find it, I put it way down. I'll have to look for, well, there we go. I put it way down in my list of things that we never get to all of them, but sorry for the paper shuffling. Like I said, there's a million lessons to be learned, and I understand if people don't learn them. I mean, everyone's busy. Corporate media just says outright, well, we're in a two-party system. I heard that so much during the elections. National propaganda radio, oh, it's a two-party system. And it's not. There are other parties even under this system, but we need another party. We need a workers' party in this country that will represent working people. We need to, working people have to stop having illusions in the Democratic Party. It's not like anyone's a member of the Democratic Party.
And when you look back at our history with Eugene Debs in last century, in turn of last century.
Socialist Party, yep.
You know,
there were labor parties in this country. The Communist Party could have gone and been an independent party at one point and decided to support the Democrats to their eternal shame and stupidity, actually. But even in this country with a two-party system locked in a lot of ways with gerrymandering and funding and so on and laws that make it hard to get on the ballot, people are still getting on the ballot. Third party, green, left-wing Greens are worth supporting and voting for. We supported Jill Stein in the election. There are other independents that are progressive and left-wing. There's a whole world out there of people dissatisfied with the Democratic Party. They didn't make the equation like I started to make earlier that everyone thinks is logical, that believes in the two-party duopoly, that believes that corporations should run our political lives, where Trump bad, really bad, admittedly, Democrats then good. Well, no, that's where it falls down. Democrats, unfortunately, not good either. Different ways of screwing people over.
Hillary was saying it would be a same struggle.
Hillary said we'll never, during the election, she said we'll never get single payer in this country. Oh, okay. Well, that's your opinion. You don't need it. We do. Single payer meaning.
And Trump's so like right-wing populist that he even spoke, yeah, that might be an issue that we might put on the ballot. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
Well, we never believed it. I know you
I
know
don't
this.
Believe what
I know,
he's saying,
I know,
but
I know,
I'm
you
saying
know.
He'll,
I know.
He'll use these little populist, right, you know, things to get us to like, oh, wow, that's something that Hillary didn't even touch.
In Socialist Alternative, when we refer to Trump's promises, and I know you
call it illusions.
Yeah, illusions. We're not citing them because we believed he believed in them or wanted to do them. We cite them because it was an example of right-wing populism that was not going away with Trump, by the way, and Trump didn't invent it. You know, Trump right now, they're about to do a major screwing over of American workers through something called tax reform. Sorry, I meant to say health care. No, I meant to say tax reform. Now, to put the word reform, which has kind of a positive connotation to it, on the worst things is an old trick in American politics. It's an old corporate trick as well. You know, every time where I work at Harvard University, where they're about to cut some funding and cut jobs or whatever, they'll start talking about change is inevitable. How can you stand against change? You must like change. Now, they're talking about change that they define, that they do when they want to do it, and that's the inevitable change. When we talk about change, like, oh, hire more people. That's change. That's reform. No, we can't do that. It's impossible. Oh, yes, that's not impossible. You got billions of dollars. When we say, and I would say this, Harvard should be taken under public ownership. Oh, how could you even think that? That's impossible. No, it's not. We could do it tomorrow. What about, you know, Harvard pays taxes for once because they don't pay, you know, these big universities don't pay any taxes. You pay taxes, Harvard. Oh, no, that's impossible because the law says, what law? They had, I was on my way to work today listening to National Propaganda Radio. And for some reason, I don't know why, because I tuned in and out of different stations, they were interviewing some guy in Scotland talking about at the time in the United States when they were burning witches legally, right? The time of the Crucible, you know, and all that, when, you know, that the play by, what's his name? Who wrote that play, The Crucible? You know, famous communist playwright, actually. It's a brilliant play.
Dalton Jumbo.
No, good guess, though, Dalton Trumbo. I'm spacing on a guy who I've read a lot of his work, but whatever, that's just the old age, I guess. But anyway, so here we have in Scotland around the same time and existing for hundreds of years, laws about witchcraft and accusing people of being a witch, and it's all perfectly legal. So now you've got people talking in this country. They're always talking about law and order. Obey the law. Illegal immigration. Well, they're not doing it the right way. There's laws against immigration. Yeah, and most laws are crap. Most laws are written and by big business, by corporate lawyers, by corporations, not the people. And there's so many examples of laws that need to be broken that are wrong. And yes, we do choose which laws. We should be able to choose which laws are good and which laws are bad. I don't like all this talk about, you know, you hear about liberals that love this crap. Law and order, rule of law. They think this is a positive thing. They don't examine who creates the laws, how they're enforced, who they're enforced on.
What is the law really doing?
Exactly.
To, you know, who does it protect, who it doesn't protect.
Yep.
Who it, you know what I mean? Things like that.
Yep, totally.
Is it in our interest as a whole as opposed to just a few?
The last real mass movement in this country in the 60s and 70s was so powerful. It wasn't the biggest movement ever in this country, but it was big. It was powerful, and it reached into things like even law and medicine and psychiatry and psychology and so on. And a left wing developed in all those fields, a sort of left wing. And they were very critical. There were critical legal studies that were like saying, bringing up the questions we're bringing up right now, you know? But what I want to get back to is the Democratic Party and the many, many lessons every day, every minute you could learn about why working people should not support the Republicans, the Democrats, the Libertarians. Any party that promotes big business and capitalism is a party that hurts workers, hurts working people, hurts youth. So yesterday, I see this thing. The mayor of Baltimore vetoes the $15 minimum wage. And this is basically a Democrat. This is the point of the story. This is a city that desperately needs a $15 minimum wage. And this Democrat came out and said she would veto legislation that would nearly double the Maryland city minimum wage. As she said, it was, this would really affect, of course, restaurant workers on low wage workers. And that was also a very wimpy minimum wage policy, I have to say, by the way. It was a $15 an hour increase, but not until the first increase wouldn't kick in until 2022. Can you get that? That's really too far away. For businesses with 50 or more employees, at 2026 for businesses with fewer than 50.
So it's 5 years
so
later.
10 years later, basically, for the smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. 5 years. Yeah. For so, the bigger, that's way too far
inflation,
away.
Inflation, cost of life goes up. Yep. That $15 is like $10 today.
Exactly, and yeah, we're not. And by the way, when we put forward $15 minimum wage, I can hear some people say that's not enough. We agree, it's not. It's a step towards a living wage. It's not a living wage, which it makes this even more horrible that people would vote against it. The Democrats and Republicans both vote against this stuff. But here again, I'm going at it from the angle of, oh, Democrats are an alternative to Republicans. No, they're not. Here they're voting with the Republicans. Actually, there's no even Republicans around in a lot of inner cities. You got to understand, a lot of cities, not just inner cities, a lot of cities, Republicans are long gone. They don't exist. We're talking about one party city, often one party state, something like New York State or Massachusetts or whatever. Democrats have been in power for a long time, and all the same pro-capitalist neoliberal crap comes down on working people's heads that happens in other states. So here we have a Democrat vetoing a $15 minimum wage proposal that even passed the city council, and it was a wimpy one on top of it. So I'm looking at that. I'm saying, yeah, gotta make sure people know about that one, and look it up yourself if you don't believe me. But then I find earlier in the year, I think it was this year, 2016, the article doesn't even have – Washington Post doesn't put the year of an article on their thing. Can you believe that? Here's Washington Post, Maryland Politics – headline, which I'll say in a second, by Bill Turk, January 23. Well, thank you, Washington Post. January 23 of what year? Now, I can ascertain from the article that I believe it's talking about 2017. By the way, I said 2016. I meant 2017. Based on how some of the formulations in the article. And this is about another Democrat higher up in the food chain in Maryland who vetoes a $15 minimum wage for an entire county in Maryland. Now, I've been to Maryland. A lot of poverty, you know? Whether there was or wasn't, we still need a $15 minimum wage, a step towards living wage everywhere in the United States. But I'm saying they particularly need it in the places that we're talking about here, Baltimore, parts of Maryland, Montgomery County, Maryland. Actually, Montgomery County, they say, is a wealthy county and would have been the first jurisdiction in Maryland to require a $15 minimum wage. I don't know what they mean by wealthy, but whatever. Yeah, okay, so why didn't they do it? Here's a Democrat, again, vetoing this. His name is Leggett, L-E-G-G-E-T-T, Democrat. Said boosting the wage would, quote, harm Montgomery's economy and its ability to compete for jobs in the Washington region. No, it wouldn't.
Just that.
There have been plenty of studies of Seattle where Shama Sawant, member of Social Alternative, city councilor, we got $15 minimum wage passed. Minimum wage law passed, and the restaurants are booming out there. But yeah, under capitalism, there are times where the economy takes a downturn, profits for some capitalists take a downturn, and you know what we say then?
The math is like doesn't hit them. Like, wait, more money, more buying power,
right?
For exactly. You know, where the people that are making that money.
Yep.
That stimulates the economy because now they're going to be buying more. They can afford it now. Or, you know what
and
I mean?
I agree with that.
Even in, but, I'm not defending the cap. I'm just saying, even in their sense of
in their system, more money within, into, their parameters, within their boundaries,
mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. And that's also true of what the argument I made, where they've done empirical studies since the $15 minimum wage went in Seattle. It was the first city in the country. It has not hurt big business, just the opposite. Totally agree with that kind of analysis, but only up to a point. There will be a point where there will be a downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And the capitalists will then try to blame it on wages, but it's got nothing to do with wages. It's got more.
Well,
to do
blame it on you see that $15. You see it. Yeah, they're the ones that ruined.
Exactly.
It, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
So it's got nothing to do with wages in that narrow sense. It's got a lot to do with, in general, we're not paid back the full value of the value we create, and the capitalists steal that surplus value for themselves, and they can invest it or not invest it. And it's not a planned economy, and all the problems with capitalism, all the contradictions of capitalism that Marx and others talk about, results in downturns under capitalism. So here we have a thing in Seattle where, or anywhere else, where they'll start blaming in the future stuff like this, but it's not stuff like this. It's the fact that they want more profit. And what we say is, you got to get used to taking less profit sometimes. And there's going to come a time where you get no profit at all. We run things on our own as working people. But even under capitalism, there's times where you take less profit for other reasons. You can take it for wages, too. So say a capitalist was able to prove, which I think would be very difficult.
Well, these guys are so rich at a point right now that they can just retire and just go live in your little island while
it's
we
never
just
enough
take
for
care
them,
of our
though.
Society.
Never enough. Never enough
you know,
for
needs.
Them. The greed is insatiable under capitalism because the system works on, it's engineered to always be increasing the rate of profit and also the amount of profit. All the time. And if you're not, they say, where else can we put our money? Let's put it somewhere else. We'll get more profit. And what we say is there are times where you take a hit in profits. Your fixed costs went up, for example, and you weren't able to pass that on for some reason in your price, or you felt like you couldn't. You take a hit that way. Or the executives want more money. They get a pay raise. You take a hit in your profits that way as a company. They take hits in their profits all the time for other reasons. When it comes to wages, I'll say, no, that's sacrosanct. You can't. When it comes to benefits, no, we can't give more benefits to the workers or more wages. Those two things, never, never, never. But all these other things that affect our bottom line, that's okay. We got to adjust for that. Well, we're saying adjust for this. Adjust for this. You're not going to go out of business. You're going to get less profit for a time. Too bad. You know? That's anyway, so this guy, Leggett, and the mayor of Baltimore, Democrats, big Democrats, have hurt working people horribly. So forgive us if we, yes, applaud the Trump victory, but see that the battle continues. And a lot of places, it's not Trump. A lot of places, it's the Democrats. And this was basically, again, a wimpy $15 hour minimum wage proposal, including the one in Montgomery County, also wouldn't really kick in till 2022. And so Democrats vetoing all over the place, despite a huge public interest in that. And there was an article I read. I'll turn you on to it. Somebody printed it out and didn't put the citation. Let's see. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, I asked someone to help me and print this out. And I said, hey, make sure you print it out. It looks like an article so I can read the citation. And they didn't. But I thanked them for printing it out anyway. Anyway, it was. It's from, I believe, counterpunch.org. I don't even have the author on here. Thanks a lot. Also for printing this out with no author. And it's about, I'll give you the title. You'll find this, the title, I think, on the reformation of the Democratic Party. And it's somebody who had illusions of the Democratic Party, still kind of might in some ways, but gives a kind of history of the Democratic Party and very short. And we agree with a lot of this. We could add to it, but we'll just quickly say, viewing American politics from a historical perspective, the only thing that has ever moved either of the major political parties towards the needs and hopes of the average American has been a semi-viable, or in the case of the 1850s, new Republican Party. The old Republican Party was considered at that time the party of Thomas Jefferson, or in other words, a viable third party, quote unquote, So in other words, nothing ever really moves in a big way until the two parties are threatened by a third party. This was very true up in Canada, where the New Democratic Party in 1964 was able to get health care, universal health care for all Canadians by forming a party around left-wing groups and unions and progressive groups all got together. That was one of their main things. We need national health care. And although they never won national office, or they haven't yet, they've won in certain provinces up in Canada, the New Democratic Party, and they've shifted to the right since their foundation, unfortunately. Just the threat of the New Democratic Party becoming like a major party, and it is kind of a major party now, but even bigger, was like you had the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party up in Canada adopting universal health care.
Now, what about the places that's the way it could Canada work here? That was so French, like Quebec.
I don't know what the Quebecois Party, the PQ, is it Parti Quebecois? I don't know what they did at that time in 1964. I'm sorry. I think they probably went along with it. There have been times where the New Democratic Party has done well in Quebec. Quebec right now, the Committee for Workers International group up there is supporting Québec Solidaire, which is a left-wing, new left-wing party up there. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, to really push things forward, you need to have a viable third party, quote-unquote, movement, or fourth party, fifth party, whatever. And we don't have that. So the Democrats know they can do the left-wing populism a la Sanders or even Clinton and then go back to business as usual when the elections are over. So then also in the U.S. in the 1890s, there was something called the People's Party or the Populist Party that pushed the Democrats leftward. And the Democrats actually adopted some of the more progressive stuff for a while. And the People's Party disintegrated into the Democratic Party. This is the second lesson this guy's getting at here, which we agree with.
This is the 1890s?
Yeah. That the Democratic Party is littered with the detritus, the leftover progressive parties that said, oh, we're going to reform the Democratic Party. This is still happening now with, for example, DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. We're going to reform the Democratic Party. Now, they've been trying since the 1960s doesn't really should show them that it doesn't work. But other attempts by other parties, left-wing parties, progressive organizations, so on, to reform the Democrats have all died within the Democratic Party. As we've said before on the show, it's an old joke, but unfortunately true. The Democratic Party is the Roach Motel of progressive politics. Progressives go in and never come out again.
It's a graveyard.
Graveyard. Total graveyard. So then in 1930s, and this guy skips over the statewide thing in Minnesota, where you had a farmer labor party that in the 1930s started to get cozier and cozier with the Democrats, to finally they got swallowed up by them and disappointed.
Farmers had their own party?
Farmer Labor Party.
Farmer, that's the farmers.
Labor Farmer. It was called Farmer Labor, but labor had a big influence in it. They actually got a governor elected, but then that governor turned against the big Teamster strike led by Trotskyists in 1934, and that was a signal that they were really coming part of the Democratic Party, and they went all the way to the Democratic Party. and died. So this guy says, this author, forget his name, but he's not here. Thank you again. Then in the 1930s, the threat posed by the massive unemployment of approximately 25% for years on end provided leftist parties, including various communist parties, as well as numerous socialist parties, but it was mainly the communist party, pushed FDR, who incidentally ran on a somewhat rightist balanced budget platform. He was forced to adopt a full Keynesian economic policy. And we've talked about that on the show before, for the history of FDR was not progressive at first, only progressive seeming, as he was trying to, in his own words, save capitalism. And then all these programs that he would do, he would just cut as well. Like I heard on the radio, someone's, I forget the context, they're saying that, like, oh, in 1940, the Depression, people were recovering from the Depression. No, they were still in the Depression, actually, in 1940. The Depression continued to about 1942, 43, until all that money went into military spending and employment and hiring people. Yep. In 1944, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, forced FDR against his desires to accept Harry Truman instead of his choice of Henry Wallace, who was a stalwart of progressive policies. In contrast, Truman was a little-known and somewhat right-of-center senator from the backward state of Missouri, but he was a favorite among the financial elites of the Democratic Party leadership. Now, what did we get from Truman? We got the atomic bombs. We got the National Labor, Taft-Hartley bill, which cemented the National Labor Relations, or created the National Labor Relations Board, all this other stuff that's hurt labor very badly. So anyway, this is a good article. It goes into a lot of the history that, not a lot, not enough, but it goes into some of the history that we've talked about on the show before that's in a lot of socialist alternative material, that's in other left-wing critiques of the Democratic Party. There's a book by Lance Selfa I would recommend, S-E-L-F-A. I can't remember the title. Came out in 2012 about the Democratic Party from a left-wing perspective. Anyway, don't have time to go into this too much more. Some of the things he's not actually very accurate on, or a couple things. But like to say that like Sanders was unique, which even some people in Social Alternative have said, I disagree with. This guy goes into Henry Wallace as an example. So let's see what he says about Henry Wallace really quick. How the nomination went to Harry S. Truman, who did not actually seek it, is, in the words of biographer Robert H. Farrell, one of the greatest political stories of our century. The fundamental issue was that Roosevelt's health was seriously declining, and everyone who saw Roosevelt, including the leaders of the Democratic Party, realized it. If he died during his next term, the vice president would become president, making the vice presidential nomination very important to these Democrats. Truman's predecessor as vice president, the incumbent, this is the incumbent, this is the vice president under Truman, under FDR, Henry A. Wallace, was unpopular with some of the leaders of the Democratic Party because his liberal politics and unreliable and eccentric in general. But Wallace was, however, the popular candidate and favored by the convention delegates. Sound familiar? As the contrast, as the convention began, Wallace had more than half the votes necessary to secure his renomination. Sound familiar? Sound like Sanders? By contrast, the Gallup poll said that 2% of those surveyed wanted then-Senator Truman to become the vice president. Only 2%. To overcome this initial deficit, the leaders of the Democratic Party worked to influence the convention delegates such that Truman received the nomination. That's a nice way to put it. Worked to influence. Bought up, threatened, cajoled, etc. In other words, according to this guy, the Democratic Party elites were not interested in what the people wanted, no kidding, and willing to resort to whatever means they deemed necessary to subvert the people's will, no kidding, to serve their personal agendas. Now, the thing with both Sanders and Wallace, if they had gotten elected, they would have gotten elected without a new party, obviously, because they're staying within the Democratic Party. They would have been totally isolated, and they would have done a lot of the same stuff Clinton would have done, is truth be told.
But wasn't Wallace anti-imperialist?
Wallace,
he was more for Wallace, Republic.
Yeah,
as
Wallace.
Opposed to
yeah,
empire.
Wallace was sort of left populist, like Sanders. And again, they didn't like it back then. They don't like it now. Then he gives the example of George McGovern. Same thing. He didn't get the support of the Democratic Party elites, even though he was elected as the candidate. Again, a lot of examples. Don't have time to go into all of them. Let's switch gears and go back to what we promised earlier in the show. Talk about May 1st. Now, what does that mean? To those of you listening, you might be like, May 1st, what's that about? Well, May 1st is International Workers' Day. International Workers' Day. We don't want to get into the history too much, but it's really fascinating history because it was an American holiday. International Workers' Day comes from the fight for an 8-hour day. And the 1886 Haymarket Martyrs labor leaders that were killed. They were anarchists. At the time, anarchism and socialism was kind of still working itself out. And they were anarchists and socialist-influenced labor leaders who were hung by the Illinois because they were in a rally that turned into a riot that the police probably started. I think a policeman was killed, and they blamed all these people for it, and they killed them. And I'm just giving a thumbnail sketch. It might have been more than one policeman that was killed. And this became a big cause of the left, but also a way for the government to crack down on the growing left wing.